Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly Fukushima irradiated, but of course we don't know because we stopped testing the seawater for radiation like last year sometime, because obviously it's just not a threat, and we never tested any of our imports or anything like that either, because obviously it's just not worth the worry. I mean, look, if you're going to be contaminated with nuclear radiation, it's best if you not know about it, because that way you can keep continuing to buy the contaminated products and support the economy. Just like a lot of the rest of the population who now are supporting the economy through their part-time jobs and incandescent light bulb. And my very special guests are Sophia Smallstorm and Ole Damegaard. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much.
I'm unfamiliar with Sophia, so would you be able to give us a little bit of an intro about yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
I'm a curious person, and I try to learn more about things that I'm curious about. And that's it, and that's all.
Can I jump in here? Sophia Smallstorm is an incredible researcher in this Sandy Hook and other major false flag and so on. I've got great respect for her work.
Yes, you know, thank you. That's very nice of you. So many people think, I had someone tell me yesterday that he thought I was a nanobiologist, and I am not. I am not a PhD in any way. I have managed to get my brain to chew down on some science, and I think sometimes the less we know in terms of expertise, technical expertise, the more easy it is to make some connections that the people who are buried in their tiny little mouse hole of research will never see, you know?
Kind of like doing a PhD on the small toe of a camel or something of that nature. It just has no practical significance, and it doesn't really have any connections or satisfaction for any given researcher. And in fact, maybe if I can qualify something you've said there, in some cases I've found the less educated somebody is, the less barriers come up to their research. Because I found that education is something that just sort of, it's like a intellectual or cognitive immune system where it simply attaches antibodies to new ideas, radical ideas and things of that nature, and destroys them and expels them from the brain.
Yeah, possibly. I have fallen into a whole new line of awareness just as of this morning. And I was turned on to a woman, Samantha Khoury, yesterday, and I did watch her video. It's a documentary made about her called I Talk to Animals. And this woman is one of those animal whisperers. She actually can figure out what the animal is annoyed about or suffering from, and she can talk to it and tell it, okay, we're going to fix this situation in your life where you have to stop doing this, that, or the other thing. And she talks to animals and receives information from them in by way of pictures. You see, we don't do that, humans. We think in words and thoughts, which are very amorphous, and yet experience is all about pictures. And that set off this giant light bulb in my head. So, Ole, I think you said you saw her in person?
Yeah, I did in Stockholm. I've been admiring her for many, many years. As far as in my world, she was the first animal whisperer I ever came across, and she's extremely detailed in the information given. An absolute beautiful woman who had a very, very hard childhood, where the only one that she could communicate and get along with were it was her dog. And she thought that it was natural to communicate with animals. She had no idea that no one else was doing it. And she, just like you say, she does it with pictures. She receives images and she sends images, and that's the way she gets it. But she gets extremely detailed information. I know once, for instance, she was called home to a home where they had three dogs and they were barking all the time very, very viciously. And Samantha went in there and stayed with the dogs and asked them, so, hey guys, what's going on here? You know, this is not very popular, you barking all the time. And these dogs said, but we're really, really upset with our owner. And so she said, so what's going on? No, he's having an affair. He's bringing this other woman into our home here and behind the back of his wife, and that's not on. So Samantha was like, oh my God. How am I going to tell the owner about this? But she did. She told the woman that owned the dogs that, well, according to your dogs, your husband is having an affair and he's bringing her home here.
The dogs told her that the woman's husband was acting like a dog.
There you go. But anyway, the woman got extremely upset, threw Samantha out, but then called her about a week later saying that she confronted her husband and he first denied, but then he admitted it all. And after he got rid of this woman, he ended the affair, they got back together and the dogs were fine.
So I didn't bring this up because of, poignant little stories. Really, I brought it up because everybody I know who's awake complains bitterly about the condition of the earth today, and politics and chemtrails and vaccines and this, that, and the other. But I think we can't do this just in thoughts and words. We have to somehow wake up in us the ability to use the spectrum of our powers, and I'm looking at something, you know, the visible spectrum is light, and that's how we see what happens around us. And if we can retain those experiences in the form of memories, they're like photographs taken from the visible spectrum. We have to start doing this. We have to start seeing the corrections that we want, not just complaining about them. And I know people have said this before, but I never really understood it till today. So you have to watch that video, I Talk to Animals.
Well, I wanted to actually make a point here actually kind of correct you in your first statement about how we only really think in words and ideas and things of that nature. Absolutely not true. There's a guy called Sir Ken Robinson who used to be on the board of the Royal Ballet, and he did a really great speech in front of the TED conference in Los Angeles one time. And he said that basically what happens is education trains you out of all of your other modes of thinking, because we think in every single way that we can interact. We think in smell, we think in music, we think in movement, we think kinesthetically. And what the education system is predicated on is that all of those forms of creativity don't have any value, and they strip mine people's minds for a particular commodity. That thinking and ideas and that word part that you're talking about.
Well, I think what I meant when I was saying that was we are left with these. I mean, when I talk, I literally see a typewriter in my head and it's typing every word out. This is why it kind of drives me nuts to hear foreign languages, because I don't know how to spell them and I can't type it in my head. So I don't know how I ended up with that mechanism, but I am not thinking and using all the modalities that you just talked about. And I don't think a lot of people are.
Well, yeah, they've been squandered, more or less.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were born a natural runner or something like that, and you were told constantly throughout your entire life to sit down, stop moving, don't move too fast or anything like that, how good of a runner are you going to develop into?
That's right. So, you know, I've talked to Ole before on Skype about the nature of the world today, and I can hear in him the distress. And then I listened to a show that a YouTube of him addressing the public in Denmark in front of the Bilderberg conference, and he was all inspired. And I thought, okay, so these are two sides of the same person, and what lies in between, and how can all of us, you know, really like activate the inspired part of ourselves such that it starts playing out in real life?
Well, it's kind of like in my opinion, the way to get that going is sort of like by taking action. Most of the time we have thoughts that occur to us and they're like, wow, that'd be great, that's a good idea, or maybe I should do that. But within 5 seconds, your brain will either pull the handbrake or it'll activate, and most people choose to pull the handbrake and never fulfill their dreams. And so they spend the vast majority of their life denying who it is they are and denying what inspires them and spending their life doing something else.
Okay, but those of us who haven't denied that, I mean, who are, you know, trying to do something in our own way, I think we can still do more. And that's what I'm going to try to figure out for myself. Not just YouTube lectures and audio interviews and a few posts on my website and my newsletters. There's another modality yet, and many more after that. And that's where I want to go.
Specifically?
Well, after I watch this video, I'm like on fire about this talking to animals and seeing pictures of the future, going into the animal's being or connecting with it and seeing pictures that they're giving you of the situation that they don't like. I mean, if she can do it, she says everybody can do it. I think I have to start thinking in pictures more. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, and on top of that, the communication with other creatures and things of that nature, we're talking about a balance between, I think, a lot of what humans are brought up to believe and a lot of what's actually real, but it's kind of like just below the surface and we're not kind of like aware of our own abilities to a large degree. Is that what you're talking about?
That, and I, at the same time, right now I'm in the middle of an interview with somebody on Red Ice, let's see what his name is, Anthony Peake, P-E-A-K-E, he's from Britain.
I've had him on the show a couple of times, he's great.
Yeah, he's been talking about this writer, Philip K. Dick, and I'm telling you, Philip Dick was all about orthogonal time, which isn't linear time, and I don't understand that very well, but that's where we have to go. I said in my Sandy Hook talk, it was titled, Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 dimensions. And I didn't really go into the 6th dimension, which is where everything is. All possibilities for all things are in that dimension. I did explain that we have the ability to pull from all possibilities those that really happen in our linear 3D lives. So this orthogonal time is basically the 6th dimension. And I think that the perpetrators are operating out of another dimension, and they're doing things to us, and we're sitting here trapped in this 3rd dimension, and all we can really do is react. We're going, ooh, ow, stop it, don't do that. Well, how can we get away from this? And we're not going anywhere.
Well, I find that there's two problems here, because on the one hand, you've got people who deny the existence of anything other than three-dimensional. They deny any kind of psychic abilities. They deny any kind of spiritual abilities or what have you. And they say, no, this is it. This is all there is. And then there's another group of people, which in my opinion are even worse, who deny the 3D reality is actually having any relevance and only say the fifth dimension and stuff that they can't see or can't interact with right in front of this thing that they can't even actually show people exists is the only thing that matters. And in so doing, they lose touch with the reality that we all share.
You mean like the New Agey types?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the slippery slope, because I found if you need to have an effect on the world around you in order to feel justified in your existence, and I think any reasonable person actually needs that to a degree. We need interaction with other people. We need to be taught things. We need to be accepted. Really? And I think this is why high school's so damaging to everybody, because you don't learn anything and you never get accepted.
Lloyd, do you have anything to say?
I tell you, Sophia, you talked about the difference being inspired and not being inspired. And at the moment, I've taken a break. I've gone back to Sweden for a few weeks and just tried to regroup, relax, breathe, get back in balance, because I feel when I'm not in touch with whatever it is that inspires me, a higher power, whatever you want to call it, if I'm not in touch with that, then I don't do a lot of good. I just go around in circles, so I need to regroup. So at the moment, I don't speak so much. I prefer to gather my strengths instead.
Now, I'm also a bit confused because I have not seen your Sandy Hook presentation, Sophia. Would you be able to actually give us a little bit of a recap of what you actually delve into that in that presentation?
Well, I really structure it around the second dimension and the third dimension. The second dimension is, you know, the printed world and the screens that we see all the time. And the techniques that certain people have today with information are so good, they're so developed, that they can fictionalize anything in the 2D world. And that's what happens with these events. They are largely fictional. They are taken to the screen, and the public is allowed to run with them. Now, I do explore the concept that Sandy Hook was a large-scale drill called an integrated capstone event. And if you picture the pyramid, even on the dollar bill or any pyramid, the very top peak of that is called the capstone. And on the dollar bill, that's where that eye is, the all-seeing eye. So in these drills, which are comprised of many different teams, they're Homeland Security drills. The all-seeing eye, the people who know everything and have organized the drill, are at the top of the pyramid. And then all the resources, you can read about these drills, capstone events, on, you know, FEMA's website. But all of the teams, like the hospitals and the first responders and the police and the highway patrol and media, they're all resources involved in the drill. And again, each of those is a pyramid. And at the very top level of those teams are people who know what's really going on. And everybody else in the resource team knows less and less and less down the hierarchy. So in these drills, you've got a very small number of people who have organized and are managing the drill. And everybody else is instructed. The nature of the drill is to act on your training and use your best judgment. So this is where they give an aspect of the drill to the media to run with. And for instance, that aspect would be, okay, so we had a shooting and there was a 20-year-old who used to go to this elementary school, and he came back and he knocked off a bunch of kids and teachers and he broke into the school somehow. So then the media goes running with that. And the thing is, the exercise doesn't end that day. The whole purpose of it is a surveillance of society in this context. And it's a prolonged experiment, and it has the ability to seed change, radical change within the society. So the stories continue that the media puts out, and many of these stories do not comport with 3D reality. For instance, the original story itself, that Adam Lanza was, you know, autistic, he had Asperger's, he was very thin. In the final police report, he's said to be 6 feet tall and 112 pounds, and he's got all this weaponry strapped to him, which would be very difficult to discharge and manage with that kind of emaciated frame. So the 2D stories don't even fit the 3D reality, but that doesn't bother most of the public. So all of this is observation that's going on of us. And there are some of us who say, wait, you can't have that. The kid like that could never shoot that many people in that span of time, etc., etc. So all this is being observed.
It seems so much like many mass shootings where there are conflicts within the official stories. What this specifically reminded me of was the Port Arthur massacre in Australia, where, again, a person who was allegedly mentally disabled managed to kill, like, 20 people or something like that, and only fire like maybe around 20 shots, and be reported to be pirouetting in between shots and kills and things of that nature. Like, I was like looking at the real story and what the official story was, and I was like, professional assassin probably committed this, and the official story is just some patsy.
Well, today, given that time has passed and the nature of the public is even more...
dumbed down?
Out of it, yeah, unconscious and unconcerned. That's another quality that has developed in the masses. The lack of interest in self-preservation. The reliance on a societal order that will just, you know, fill in the blanks for you. Take care of whatever. You know, don't make your dinner. Go and stop off at Taco Bell and buy something wrapped in a piece of waxy paper that you don't even know the contents of. That's how people are. They have really shoved off the need or interest or desire to control their own lives. And all of this is part of the forming of the post-human world. So you want maybe that I should explain that. We are in this transition called transhumanism. We're moving from Homo sapien to Homo something else. And there is a popular name for it out there. Maybe it's just a working name. It's called Homo evolutus. And we are now already holding in our physical bodies, our cells, what's called CDB, cross-domain bacteria. We are not eukaryotic. And here I would have to go into biology a little bit, but we have elements from the other life kingdoms in our subcellular structures. So we are moving already from Homo sapien toward Homo evolutus or Homo something else. And that's the beauty of what they've managed to create, is we are the living laboratories. We are the modes and means of the change, and we don't even know it.
It seems to me that the human race is kind of like, on the one hand, we've been told that we've got all this potential and everything. On the other hand, we forcibly have all that potential squandered. And then furthermore, on top of that, because we don't know what it is to be human anymore, it makes it so much easier to accept things like upgrades, you know, implants, microchips.
Hybrids. We've grown used to hybrids. We eat hybridized fruit. We have hybridized pets. You know,
we drive hybrid cars.
Exactly. So the hybrid is the model that we are ourselves becoming. The hybrid is it. That's how they're doing everything, hybridization. The influx of immigrants into Northern European countries and America also from South America. This is all hybridization.
It's dilution, and what seems to be interesting is that there's a resistance and an awareness of this transhumanist agenda, and it's quite sad because the apathy and the lack of curiousness, which you so eloquently pointed out, prevents people from even listening to this type of dialogue and even figuring out what is killing them. You know, a lion could be chewing on somebody's ankle, you know, in a figurative sense of the word, and you say, "Bro, it's a lion on your ankle. It's going to eventually eat all of you." And you're like, no. I'll just have myself another beer, and it'll be all right.
Well, you know, there was a story by Herman Melville, the American writer, 1853, called Bartleby the Scrivener. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm sorry.
It's subtitled A Story of Wall Street. And I just came across it again, and I hadn't reread the whole thing, but I remember very clearly when I first read it, which I think was in college. And Bartleby was this scribe, because at that time they didn't have photocopy machines, they didn't have typewriters, and so if you wanted a copy of something, you had to either sit down and write it all out yourself, or you had to hire someone. So he was what they called a scribe or scrivener. And he worked for this lawyer on Wall Street back in, you know, the 1850s. Picture it. And at the end of the day, his boss said, "Well, Bartleby, we're closing up, you know, it's time to stop, and we have to all go home." And Bartleby said, "I prefer not to." And he never went home, he never stopped writing, and every single question they ever asked him, he answered, "I prefer not to. I prefer not to." He was like a broken record, that was the only thing he said. Now, that's what I see happening in the public today. They just prefer not to do what you're trying to put in front of them, even if what it is trying to wake them up to the fact that there's a lion on their foot. "Don't you want to know about this? Don't you want to do something about it?" "I prefer not to." And that equates to the path of least resistance taken by electricity also, curiously.
Well, we're not electricity and we're not water, although we're full of water and we're full of electricity. However, we've got a choice about whether or not we act like it. Isn't that interesting? Human potential, ladies and gentlemen, there's a huge, huge amount of it. And by all means, continue to be apathetic and continue to not care about anything, and you'll never achieve it. Thank you very much for listening. My very special guests have been Ole Damegaard from lightonconspiracies.com. Is that exactly the right website?
It is, and I'm very quiet today, so I apologize for doing a radio show.
It's in the middle of the night, bro. What do you expect?
It is indeed.
He needs to get some nap time. And Sophia Smallstorm as well, do you have a website, or perhaps give people the name of a video or anything like that about your Sandy Hook presentation? Sophia, are you there? Okay.
I sent you the link to her talk about Sandy Hook. It's here in the chat.
All right. I've got that one there. So, Sophia Smallstorm Unraveling Sandy Hook on YouTube is the one to look out for there, ladies and gentlemen. You've been listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back.